This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. And the podcast is available online at charlestonsportsradio.com by clicking on our show page. You can always join the conversation at charlestonsportsradio.com by clicking on the show page, leaving a comment there. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. Text the show 843-608-1734, or you can always join the conversation on the phones, 843-721-9500. Hey, you have another chance to give blood and help save a life tomorrow at the American Red Cross Blood Drive. Going on at Cruz Chevrolet tomorrow, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. in North Charleston. Sign up today at redcrossblood.org. Use the sponsor code CRUZ. Walk-ins are welcome. Appointments always preferred. And all donors receive a complimentary certificate for an oil and filter change, tire rotation, and more, and will be entered for a chance to win an exclusive Shark Week merchandise package, including a kayak, paddleboard, and more, going on tomorrow, July 27th, at Cruz Chevy in North Charleston. Head over there, give blood, help save a life, and get something cool out of it as well, including a gift card for your car and potentially some cool Shark Week merchandise, which I believe has begun. So head over there to the blood drive tomorrow at Cruz Chevy in North Charleston. Hey, I just saw, you know, they honored, and it was a great thing, Rachel Robinson, Jackie Robinson's wife, at the All-Star break. You know, she turned 100 years old the day of the All-Star game, which is amazing. And I just saw online she was at the ribbon cutting ceremony for something with Jackie's Hall of Fame. And it's amazing. She's 100 years old, right? You figure Jackie passed away now, I believe it was 50 years ago. It's been 50 years. And you think back to when he broke the color barrier, they're about 20. That was 75 years ago, right? She was already a grown woman. She was in her 20s with Jackie going through that. And now it's been 75 years since. It's amazing. She's 100. And I saw in this video her son was cutting the ribbon with her. Her son is 70, which is amazing. It's like the Mandelbaums in Seinfeld. So it's great. Rachel Robinson just turned 100 last week. She was out there in the public today cutting the ribbon with her son, David, who he himself is 70 years old. And that's great, right? To have your mother around until you're in your 70s is fantastic. Rachel was, you pay so much attention, of course, to what Jackie did, and rightfully so. But obviously, Rachel was such a big supporting part behind them, allowing him to go through all that. And she's done a lot of good and a lot of great things since Jackie's passing all those years ago. But she's 100. Her son's 70. It's amazing. And happy belated birthday to Rachel Robinson. Speaking of baseball, the trade deadline is a week from today. Now, I referenced earlier and yesterday, in fact, the movie Moneyball, where in the movie, the whole thing is spurned on, it's brought on, and it's fairly inaccurate. Moneyball really began with Sandy Alderson in the 90s, and he gets no credit for it. Billy Beane was his assistant. Then Billy Beane became the GM, and there was a book written about Moneyball, and they gave it a name. Whenever you give something a name, and it becomes a marketing campaign, right? It's a big deal. Now suddenly it's Moneyball. And it takes on a life of its own, and Billy Beane's credited with it, but it really started far before him in Oakland, before he was even the GM. But in the movie, they also give a lot of credit to Jonah Hill's character, who I believe is based on Paul DeBattista, who was working in baseball and now is helping to run the Browns and was very analytical, and still is very analytical. But the idea of people looking at baseball the wrong way, and that on-base percentage is the most important thing. And how many runs can they score? I think we're still looking at things the wrong way in baseball. And with the trade deadline a week away, we may see some big names moved. And nowadays in baseball, you know, that big name, the big-time player is a guy that will clobber a lot of home runs, but the batting average will be pretty low. And that's baseball today, the three-result game, where it's about homers, walks, strikeouts. You don't need to put the ball in play. You don't have to steal bases. Don't have to do hit and runs. None of the above, just simply wait around until you get that big home run. And we talk about this a lot on the air whenever we break down baseball, because I think many in baseball, in the sport itself, in those front offices, are still looking at the sport the wrong way. If you go back and you look over the past decade, if you look at just the last 10 years, all the teams that participated in the World Series, 20 of them in total, you add them up, you get an average rank in home runs of 13 for the league. The average World Series participant last decade ranks 13th in the league in home runs hit. Good, not great. Essentially middle of the road, right? Not in the top 10. Rarely, if ever, do they actually lead the league in homers. But if you also look at those same winners over the past 10 years, the teams that have actually won a World Series, the 10 teams that have won the last 10 World Series all were better hitting teams than league average. They all had better team batting averages than the league average batting average. Of the last 10 World Series champions, one led the league in homers. That was the Dodgers when they won during the bubble season, which is a bit of an outlier in itself. But otherwise, in the past decade, three of the World Series champions led the league in batting average. Two others finished number two. So half of the last 10 World Series champions were top two in the league in batting average. Only one was top two in homers. So what has been more valuable, right? The ability to still put the ball in play, to still string some hits together, or the ability to just simply crush a lot of homers. Additionally, more than half of the last 10 World Series winners also struck out fewer times than league average. So this idea that homer, strikeouts, that's baseball, it's fine. Let's get a guy who's going to hit 250, strike out 150 times, but also hit 30 homers. I still don't know if that's what's best for baseball. I don't know if that's the best way to build your team. Maybe over the course of a long 162-game, six-month season, but we see it a lot in all sports, that by the time you get to the playoffs, things become a little bit different. You can't necessarily win with just the three-pointer. You can't necessarily win in football by just simply throwing the football. And in baseball, we know, the Yankees have certainly proven it over the past 13 years, you can't just win by hitting a lot of homers. And if you go back and look, last 10 World Series champs were all better hitting teams, just simply batting average-wise, than they were home runs. Now, to further prove the point, if you go back to this past offseason, the 12 players in Major League Baseball this past offseason that signed contracts of more than $100 million, of those 12, none of them made an All-Star game this year. So I think teams are kind of investing in the wrong areas. You're giving guys money that will have low batting averages, that will hit a bunch of home runs, that will strike out a bunch, that may walk a good amount of time, right? Aren't necessarily great average hitters anymore, but they get on base, they hit homers. You're giving them all sorts of money, and you're not getting the bang for your buck. The investment is not paying off. The 12 highest paid free agents this past offseason all missed the All-Star game this year. So I think a lot of those in baseball are still looking at things the wrong way. All right, flip the telescope around. I think batting average, call me old school, I think it's still important. The ability to put the ball in play. When you do so, a lot of times good things can happen for you. The ability to still get a hit with two strikes or two outs, or to be clutch, get some big hits with runners in scoring position and two outs in an inning, that's always crucial. I think these are the things that still win, not just crushing homers, and the data kind of backs it up. Last 10 years, only one team in the top two in home runs for that season. But the last 10 winners, five of them are top two in batting average. I think average is still more important than homers. We'll see what happens over the next week with the trade deadline coming up a week from today. And if the Braves make a move, they obviously just lost Adam Duvall this week for the rest of the season. We'll see if the Mets remain aggressive with Steve Cohen as the owner. But it's going to be really fascinating to see. The Mets have a two-game lead over the Braves. We head towards the final 2 months of the season. And that's going to be the biggest spot, as of now, in the playoff standings, in the playoff bracket. The Dodgers will lock up a bye for the NL, and the winner of the NL East will probably lock up the second bye because they have that big of a lead on the NL Central. The way the playoff seeding now works for Major League Baseball is the three division winners get the top three spots. The three wild cards, regardless of records, get spots 4, 5, and 6. Then the top two teams get a bye. Right, we now have six playoff teams in each league. Top two get a bye. The other four play each other. And then we wind up with four teams remaining in the NL, four teams remaining in the AL, and you move forward. Whoever wins the National League East will most likely get that second bye. Whoever loses the National League East most likely would be the 4 seed. Not only would you have to play in the first round, but as of now, you'd have to play a team like the San Diego Padres, which would be the toughest matchup for anybody in the first round, anybody other than the 6 seed, that is. If you finish as a division winner, you get a first-round bye. You get a home field advantage a little bit longer, depending on the future matchups. And you also don't have to worry about facing, say, the San Diego Padres in the first round. You can sit at home in the first round and see what happens after that. The Braves and the Mets are separated by only 2 games, but whoever wins that division, that may be the most impactful thing on October. And that's exactly what Major League Baseball was hoping for when they came up with this current idea. It's probably only going to play out that way with the NL East. The Yankees and the Astros are going to wrap up the byes in the AL. The Dodgers will wrap up one of the byes. But then it's going to come down to the Mets and the Braves. And whoever wins that division, they'll get a bye. And the team that doesn't win the division, they'll be stuck playing in the first round against a pretty good Padres team, not getting said bye and making their road a little bit harder. It'll be really fascinating to see what happens these next 2 months with the Braves trailing the Mets by only 2 games, the two of them playing one another plenty the rest of the way, and with the trade deadline looming a week from now. Which team's going to make the big move? Which team will be aggressive? And much like realignment in college football, when one side does something, the other side has to react. If the SEC adds more teams, the Big Ten must add more teams. If the Big Ten's going to add Notre Dame, the SEC will probably have to respond. We're getting this idea, too, of the Big Ten looking into some sort of way where maybe the players can get a portion of the money. If they ever were to pull something off like that, you know, the SEC probably would try to do something similar. You always have to try to stay one step ahead. And so with the Mets and the Braves, you may feel confident if you're the Braves front office or the Mets front office. You may feel pretty good about your team. You feel like you don't have to add much. Even if the other team does something, you could still feel pretty good. Like, oh, that's okay, right? They had holes to fill. We don't. But I think this could be a bit of an arms race, especially from the Mets side with Steve Cohen, who's an aggressive, rich owner. If one team pulls off some sort of deal, the other team will probably try to make something happen as well. We have a week until the deadline. This year it is now August 2nd, and it's 6 p.m. So next Tuesday we'll be waiting until 6 o'clock for the final trades. We'll see if Juan Soto's being moved, and we'll see if the Mets and the Braves make any sort of big-time move in the next week that could impact this race the final 2 months. Juan Soto, obviously the big move. We'll see if he's on his way out of Washington in the next week. But I go back to my original point that just in general, when it comes to baseball, I think guys in the sport, in the league, even fans, depending on what school of thought they hail from, are still looking at things the wrong way. Batting average, to me, still more important than homers, even today in 2022. Anyway, we come back. I do want to get back to the Kyler Murray thing because I can relate in a couple of different ways with Kyler in this whole situation, with the independent study. Plus, which quarterback would you want to start your NFL franchise with? We'll get to that. We'll get to our Tuesday Top 10 as well. Still more to do here in the final hour. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers. Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
They keep things loose. They keep things alive. Everybody was dancing in the
who would you start your franchise with? It's the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. And we'll circle back to the Kyler Murray independent study debacle we were talking earlier. Here in the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Earlier we talked about Mike Sando put together his list. It's done with the voting and ranking of 50 anonymous NFL coaches and executives. And you can go find it on The Athletic if you subscribe. But in Tier 1, he has Aaron Rodgers, he has Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, and Joe Burrow in his Tier 1. And when I say his, again, I mean his article. It was really put together by those in the league. Who would you start your team with? It's an interesting conversation to be had. I think, much like the NBA, the NFL, of course, is in a very healthy spot with the amount of young quarterback talent they have. Now, we could debate this, and you could get a bunch of different answers on which quarterback you would most want to start your team with. That's a good thing. The NBA is similar. You know, like pick your favorite guy under 26 years old. There's a lot to choose from. I'd probably go Luka Doncic personally, but we could have a good debate about a number of different guys that you would want on your team first in the NBA. And that's the best thing for a league. That's when the league is doing its best. You have a bunch of young talent that's spread throughout the league, that's all, you know, on pretty level footing, and they'll be in the league driving that league forward for a number of years. So here are the guys on Get Up on ESPN having this debate. They all gave a different answer, which is a great thing for the league, but who would you want to start your NFL franchise with? We'll get to our opinions, but first, the cast and crew of Get Up breaking this down and making their selections.
It'd be very easy to say, listen, I'm going to take Patrick Mahomes instead. And I think that in many ways, you're not wrong saying that. I don't think you're wrong saying it would be Josh Allen. Josh Allen's command at the line of scrimmage, I don't think gets enough credit. You know, the stuff he does pre-snap that we've lauded great quarterbacks for doing in the past. He's remarkable at that. He maybe has the best arm in football. And as a runner, I'm not really sure that there's another equal at the position as a runner. And so, you know, when you look at everything that he has done and quite honestly will continue to do, I'm not sure that it's easy to find somebody that's actually better than him.
Yeah, I think Hasselbeck. I think that Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, Mike T, are the only reasonable answers here. Which one do you take?
I think Justin Herbert. Herbert has done more with less in his first 2 years. But below average offensive line, and he's only going to get better and better now that they have Rashawn Slater from Northwestern,
yes.
Zion Johnson. He is a superstar to me that has absolutely no ceiling. And while I like Josh Allen a lot, my only concern is he has been hit 751 times since 2018, and I'm not sure that's sustainable. Patrick Mahomes is there as well. I just like Herbert's ceiling slightly more than Mahomes.
What do you think of that?
I thought I was a big Justin Herbert fan until I met Mike Tannenbaum.
Me too.
I really think he's great, and I think he's going to be great.
I don't love anything like he loves Justin Herbert.
Right, fine. Get you somebody that feels the way that Mike feels about Justin Herbert.
Right.
I think that's good advice for all of our viewers. Look, he hasn't done it yet, right? I mean, like, well, we've seen the performance. We haven't seen the accomplishment. I would go with Patrick Mahomes. He's still 26. Right? And we've seen that he can win the Super Bowl. We've seen that he can perform at this level and deliver team success as well. We haven't seen it with Justin Herbert. I'm not saying he won't. I'm not saying he can't. Haven't seen it. So I think, you know, these are all good answers. My answer is Mahomes, and I think it's kind of easy.
Dan Graziano at the end saying it's kind of easy. But you got a Josh Allen, you got a Justin Herbert, you got a Patrick Mahomes. Maybe you would even take a Joe Burrow at this point. This did come up yesterday in the show. And Trent, you said Josh Allen, right?
I did say Josh Allen, yeah. That's my guy as of right now.
I would still go with Patrick Mahomes. I don't think Mahomes has been passed by in this category. I think if you asked the question maybe a year ago, most people or more people maybe would say Patrick Mahomes. And over the past year, I don't think I've seen enough that I would take somebody else over him right now, whether it's Josh Allen or Justin Herbert, Burrow, anybody else. Obviously, you have to account for age. If you're telling me just one game or one season, I'd probably still go Tom Brady. I would go Aaron Rodgers ahead of Patrick Mahomes. But if it's to start a franchise where this is going to be your franchise quarterback, I'm still going with Mahomes. Losing Tyreek Hill doesn't impact that for me. We're talking about the actual quarterback. I'm a big Justin Herbert fan. I think Herbert has a great skill set. I think attractiveness can be, I don't know if distracting is the right term. But you see somebody like Herbert, who really has that wow factor. Even a Kyler Murray getting that big contract, like, you know, you got a little bit of that wow factor with him as well. But for Herbert, while the ability's all there, like Joe Burrow to me doesn't have as much of the wow factor. But you know what? He just got his team to the Super Bowl, and he plays on a lesser team than the Chargers. That to me is more impressive. For Herbert, I could not put him in the top tier, as I said last hour. I could not pick him over these other quarterbacks until he shows me that he can win some big-time games. He hasn't been in the playoffs yet. Josh Allen hasn't been to a Super Bowl yet. Mahomes has been victorious. I would start things off with Patrick Mahomes. Now, when you go back to the Sando article, one of the anonymous quotes was, take away Mahomes' first read. What does he do? He runs, he scrambles, he plays street ball. And I know there's concern that when you remove now Tyreek Hill from the team this year, what does this mean for Patrick Mahomes? Maybe it could almost have a more positive impact on Mahomes and the Chiefs' offense. If you go back and you look through the time in the NFL, a lot of teams got better after they lost their star receiver because it's the Patrick Ewing theory. You didn't feel like you were forced to feed them the football or, in the case of Ewing, the basketball, and you could be more balanced and actually run the offense? And for Mahomes last year, you may recall when he struggled most, it was because teams took away the downfield stuff and made him try to slowly, methodically beat them, slowly moving down the field with some more underneath stuff. And maybe, this is all just a theory, right? But when you have a Tyreek Hill, you feel like you have to force him the football, you have to force things down the field. If you remove a Tyreek Hill, I wonder if it would force Patrick Mahomes to play more within the offense or what the defense is giving him, maybe not be as quite aggressive, and have potentially an even sharper year this season for the Chiefs. But if I could start my franchise today with any quarterback, if we were having a draft and I had to get somebody for the next decade, I'm still rolling with Mahomes number one. Then there's the Kyler Murray situation with this whole independent study that we were talking about earlier, where, as released by Ian Rappaport yesterday, part of his contract outlines this independent study program where Kyler needs to study 4 hours of film a week uninterrupted. It's part of the contract, and if he doesn't do it, he will be essentially voiding the contract, right? He'd be going against a condition of the contract and jeopardizing the guaranteed money he just signed for. I could tell you I've done independent studies before. When I was in high school, I did an independent study my senior year of high school. It was a joke. It was great. I loved it. I was working at the local TV station at the time. That was my independent study. I was already doing it anyways. I had nobody that checked on me, no teacher. Usually sometimes you get somebody assigned to your independent study, and you check in with them every once in a while, and you show the progress, and maybe you have to write a paper. It was nothing. I got to take one less class than everybody else did senior year of high school. I got to leave school earlier. I had to go there anyways. I was doing things. It was essentially like an internship that you were getting school credit for in high school. It was awesome. I loved it. In college, I also did an independent study. It was also great. It was the same idea. Senior year of college, I was already working for the commercial radio station in town. I was able to turn that into an independent study. This one was a little bit different because I did have somebody checking in, but it was very infrequently. We were supposed to meet like once a month, and then he just kind of got lazy. It was my last semester of college. I think we met a total of like two times the whole semester. And at the end of the year, I had to write a paper, but it was like 300 words, something social. It was like a one-pager. It was so easy. And it's just an easy – in fact, I think they do pass or fail grades for those classes. I did an independent study in high school and college. It was the easiest thing I ever did. Easy credits, just an excuse to not have to take another class. It was awesome. I don't know if Kyler Murray will enjoy this one as much. Uninterrupted, 4 hours of watching film, and maybe even having to be quizzed on it. And if you fail, right, what's on the line? $160 million guaranteed. For me, it was a little bit different. I mean, college courses are expensive. If I failed, I'd probably be a couple of credits short. Maybe it'd push off my graduation, but not quite the same as what Kyler Murray has on the line of making potentially $231 million in this contract. I referenced the quote earlier with Kyler where he said, "I think I was blessed with skills to just go out there and just see it before it happens. I'm not one of those guys that is going to sit there and kill myself watching film. I don't sit there for 24 hours and break down this team and that team and watch every game because in my head I see so much." I can also relate to this. It is the Morrow Midday Show. I stopped studying in college because I realized my memory, it's the one thing I've been blessed with. I have a pretty good enough memory. I don't need to study. And I got through college without studying. I don't know if I would suggest that to others. I was also a communications major. That helps. I'm not taking the hardest classes at all times. But I said studying, what a waste of time. That is so, there's nothing more boring. I couldn't keep my attention on these textbooks. You go to the library, you go to a quiet room, you sit down, you try to study. No, thank you. Freshman year, I realized I don't need to study anymore. I remember this stuff, and it was able to get me through college. So I guess I have the same arrogance or maybe just memory of a Kyler Murray where he says, I don't need to watch film. I can go out there and figure it out. It got me through college. I don't know if it could get Kyler Murray through the NFL, turning him into the great quarterback I assume he hopes to be. It's pretty important, that film study, to know your opponent before you go into a game, to be well prepared. So it led to Jamarcus Russell quickly falling out of the league, amongst other things. The opposite is what has contributed to Tom Brady becoming the greatest quarterback of all time. Where will Kyler Murray slot in? But it's like chores, right? If you grew up and your parents told you to do certain things around the house and then they gave you an allowance. I think at a certain point I may have had an allowance. I don't know. I don't remember. Once I got old enough to have these memories, like I don't really remember. I'm sure I did. I don't know. But I always had to cut the lawn. I would cut my grandparents' lawn as well. I was always responsible for the dishes after dinner. Would have to vacuum. Nobody likes their chores. But if my allowance was about $231 million, maybe I would enjoy vacuuming a little bit more. Maybe I'd have no problem going out there to mow the lawn every week. For Kyler Murray, can you sit down and watch film for 4 hours a week uninterrupted to make sure you secure your $231 million? Trent, was there a certain chore you were responsible for around the house growing up?
Well, you know, there was four of us in the household, so it was kind of evenly spread out. It was chaotic in the Corville household, so anywhere I saw fit, you know, taking out the trash, things of that nature, I would do some yard work, get the sticks out of the yard. We don't need sticks in the yard because Pops is going to mow, you know what I'm saying? So I do a couple things like that, but the Corville household was always just, you know, controlled chaos, if you will. So we kind of just did whatever our parents asked, obviously. And, you know, you mentioned allowance. I'm same with you. I don't remember, like, having an allowance, right? Like, that just – I started working when I was 14, so that was my allowance.
Yeah, right.
You know, like, if once you get a job, that's what you get. But I don't really remember having an allowance, quite honestly.
Yeah, I don't. I started working – yeah, I think I was, like, 13, and it wasn't much of a hard job. I was, like, reffing football and baseball. So, yeah, you know, an allowance wasn't necessary. But I tell you what, you put $231 million on the line, I'll do whatever you need around the house.
Oh, absolutely.
I'll paint the house for you. I'll build the house for $231 million.
Tell you what, a chore that nobody likes to do is pressure washing. That's a difficult one, especially if you got a long driveway, a circular driveway. Mm-hmm. That is no fun whatsoever.
I never pressure washed at the home growing up. My father, I don't think, trusted us enough. He did most of the work outside. Mowing the lawn was about the only thing. Every once in a while, we'd have to, like, weed whack or do the hedges, but then I'm sure we did such a terrible job, my father's like, I'm just going to do it, right? The house needs to look – the yard needs to look better than this. So mowing the lawn was the only thing. But when I worked in minor league baseball, I had to do that on the stadium. And, yeah, that wasn't very enjoyable.
Could be therapeutic. That's how I thought of it as a kid. You know, we go out there, you do a square, you know what I'm saying, put the headphones in, have a good time, listen to a podcast, whatever you're
that's
doing.
Right.
You know, just it's therapeutic.
Yeah, you know, that's what I felt. Mowing the lawn wasn't too bad for me.
Yeah.
Same idea. Put on some music. It would take about 45 minutes, an hour, but you're outside. You're getting some exercise. It's a nice day. I'll tell you the one thing, though. I'm allergic. You know, I have allergies, so every once in a while, mowing the lawn would really get my allergies going, and I'd have to take a break and go blow my nose. That was miserable. But mowing the lawn, it wasn't bad. You go out there, get a nice little workout in. But again, you pay me $231 million, whatever you want me to do for 4 hours a week. Yeah, sure, you got it. Absolutely, for that money. You can always get to the show on Twitter, at Morrow Middays. T with a G did not like my take on Kyler Murray. He said that I have so much to say about Kyler Murray's film study and what the greats do, while claiming I watch more NFL film than Kyler. And then goes in another direction about maybe I should listen to more sports talk to improve the Morrow Midday show. Well, this tweet from T with a G doesn't say I was wrong about Kyler Murray. So I got that going for me. And as I responded, what shows should I listen to? What other sports talk shows should I listen to? If you were doing film, well, it wouldn't be film, but if you were doing prep, if you were trying to get to know the opponent, if you will, right? If you were doing a study, an independent study on sports talk radio, what shows does T with a G suggest? I'm still waiting for the response. I'm very curious to see. If you were talking all time, I mean, everybody does a show differently. I would actually say you shouldn't listen to other shows because you should just do your own thing. That would be my advice for those, you know, starting out or just getting in. Find your own voice. Do your own thing. Don't try to be somebody else. We all have our own inspirations that probably leak into our styles nonetheless. If we were doing a Mount Rushmore, though, which is a bit of a hokey radio bit, but if we were doing, like, the Mount Rushmore of radio sports talk, I think you have to put Jim Rome on there. I mean, Mike and the Mad Dog were the originators, so they would have to be on the list. But Jim Rome was the first that really, like, on a national stage was big time. That has opened the door for a lot of others. I think Colin Cowherd's the best to do it right now. I think not only Mike and the Mad Dog, as I mentioned, but Mike and Mike in the Morning, Golic and Greeny for all those years were very successful in the morning. And I don't know, maybe you throw like a Dan Patrick on there. But if you're talking like Mount Rushmores or the all-time greats, but the thing is, everybody does it differently, which is the great thing about the industry. Dan Patrick's a great interviewer. Colin Cowherd comes up with unique opinions. Morning shows are always more conversational to get your day going. So Mike and Mike in the Morning were a little bit more like softball sports talk. Not that there's anything, you know, that's just the role of the morning show. Mike and the Mad Dog were more yelling at listeners, New York style. Everyone's got their own style. Feinbaum's unique in his own way. So that's the great thing, I guess, about sports talk. By the way, tea with a G. I'll be happy to get the tea with a G with you anytime you want. I'm a green tea drinker. Trent, do you drink tea at all?
You know, a green tea does have a lot of great health benefits.
Oh, yeah,
I do enjoy a green tea every so often. And I don't, you know, I'm not a big sweeteners guy, right? If you're going to get a drink, it's kind of like coffee for me. I drink coffee black. You know, I don't want to put any creamers in it. But I feel like I do have to put, you know, a little sativa or whatever it's called in my green tea. But I enjoy green tea in the morning.
Love a good green tea. I don't drink coffee. I'll drink green tea. I'll put some honey in there.
Ooh.
And I'll put a little bit. I've cut it out. But every once in a while, if I need a little pick-me-up, I'll put some sugar in there.
Okay.
In the green tea, which kind of defeats some of those health benefits. So I cut that out in recent months or years. I don't really put the sugar anymore. But every once in a while, if I'm a little sluggish, having my tea, and I know the green tea provides you a little energy just to begin with, but I'll boost it with some extra sugar in there.
I read an article that green tea, especially for men, there's a lot of incredibly good health benefits that come with it if you just drink green tea without any, you know, extra things in it. I'll send you that article. I just read it a couple days ago.
I do enjoy it. But I like the tea, like the warm green tea. I'm not going to go into the grocery store or the gas station and get like the Lipton bottled green tea.
No.
That stuff's disgusting to
me.
It's got to be warm. And maybe with a little honey as well. So tea with a G, we can grab green tea, whatever you want. And talk about Kyler Murray's film study habits. Also on Twitter, Naz Dream asked, have you or I, Trent, have we been watching Better Call Saul or Breaking Bad? I'll be honest with you, I haven't gotten into those shows. I know how great Breaking Bad is. I love Bob Odenkirk as well. I just have never gotten around to them. Maybe at some point. You ever watch Breaking Bad?
I've seen a couple episodes. Didn't really dive into it the way I should have, and I've never seen an episode of Better Call Saul, but I mean, Mike Leach was saying that he's caught up on it,
true.
I guess I have to, watch it a little bit.
Yeah, if we get the okay from Leach, I mean, you know it's good. Got to add it to the list. Yeah, I've seen a couple random episodes of Breaking Bad. Never watched Better Call Saul. But I do love Bob Odenkirk. Right now, I'm going through The Offer. Then I got to get to season 2 of Only Murders in the Building. I've been waiting for all the episodes to come out so I can just binge it. Love that show. I also got to get to Ted Lasso at some point.
Yes, that you have to get to Ted Lasso and Peaky Blinders.
Peaky Blinders is on that list as well.
If possible.
Now I got Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. God, man. Forget all that NFL film I'm watching. I've got to get through all these TV shows this fall and winter.
44 days, Luke, to NFL football. You got time.
Yeah. I'll be busy these next 44 days. Hey, when we come back, we do a top 10 list every week. And I'll be honest with you. I'm in between lists right now. I don't know. 10 biggest storylines for NFL training camps or the 10 biggest swing games for college football this year. Training camps begin today in the NFL. Maybe we'll talk about that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio. Your destination.
Coming up, the biggest things to watch with NFL training camps getting underway. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We do a top 10 list every Tuesday. You know, tomorrow we'll probably just turn it into an actual segment, talk about the potential swing games in college football this year because there are some fascinating non-conference games that could impact things early. But I did figure we do a top 10 list every Tuesday. Training camps are off and rolling. Everybody across the NFL needs to be there by the end of today. Veterans, rookies for every team. So here we go. Training camps are underway. Preseason football begins next week for the NFL. The actual season begins just over 6 weeks from now. It's right around the corner. So I figure the easy connection, why not? Let's do a top 10 list this week of the 10 things to look forward to or to look out for. The 10 biggest storylines of NFL training camps. It's this week's Tuesday Top 10.
Time for the Tuesday Top 10, where we rank anything from quarterbacks to cheeseburgers right here on the Morrow Midday Show. Interested?
We're going to do the list a little bit different this week because I really have more than 10 things, and some are bunched together, and some are apples compared to oranges. So let's go through 10 storylines for NFL training camp with the training camps beginning. Number 10, I'm going to group them all together, but certain coaches that are either coming in to their jobs or could be on their way out. Most notably, like a Mike McCarthy is the big one on the hot seat to see how things go this year at the Cowboys. But I'm very curious to see new coaches. What does Doug Peterson mean for Trevor Lawrence? And we will get a quick look at the Jaguars next week. In fact, more on them in just a moment. What about Matt Eberflus? First-time head coach and a defensive head coach. What are things going to look like for Justin Fields? The Bears just went out and added another offensive lineman today in Riley Reiff to try to help out their young quarterback. What is that first training camp going to look like for Eberflus? Nathaniel Hackett and Russell Wilson when they have potential Super Bowl aspirations on the line. So on and so forth. The coaches coming into new places, running their first training camp with their new teams. How are things going to go these next couple of weeks? Number 9 on my list of biggest NFL training camp storylines are two quarterbacks that I've been grouping together all offseason. And it's Tua and it's Jalen Hurts. And I think they're both in the same boat. Jalen Hurts may be a little bit in front of Tua because at least he made the playoffs a year ago. But both teams have talented rosters, young quarterbacks who are a bit unproven, and I think both playing for their jobs. Reports were that Jalen Hurts didn't look too good at the practices a few weeks back for the Eagles. He and Tua, even though it's just training camp and then we get to preseason and you don't, you know, learn too much, they both need to earn that respect, need to win over some of the new guys, Tyreek Hill, A.J. Brown, and need to play well enough to keep their jobs and get their teams where they want to go this year. Number 8 on the biggest storylines of training camp, I'm going to say the Jaguars, just the team. Because you have Doug Peterson getting back into coaching, Super Bowl coach, and you have Trevor Lawrence, who we've been talking about this afternoon, you know, needs to take a big step forward. And I think that's a good pairing. Plus, you get Travis Etienne coming back if you are a Clemson fan. They added a bunch of pieces in the offseason to that offense. The Jaguars, to me, just in general. Not to mention the fact that they play the first preseason game next Thursday. So we're going to get an early look on them a week from now. This is a big training camp for Jacksonville. And they have to get ready quick with their preseason beginning next week. We'll be watching them on national TV to see how they look. Doug Peterson, new coach. Trevor Lawrence needs to be much better this year. The Jags are number 8. Number 7 of the most interesting storylines this training camp, I'm going to say Drake London. Look, again, I could group a bunch of guys together and tell you just the rookie class, but I'm specifically going to say I'm going to single out Drake London because, number 1, maybe because how close the Falcons are, but number 2, he's expected to have a big impact this year. No Calvin Ridley. Kyle Pitts is your only other weapon. He's a tight end. When it comes to the wide receivers, it's all London and nobody else, and he's the youngest of the bunch in this rookie class. So I want to see right away, what do we get out of him? As a Minnesota Vikings fan, I can tell you stories of guys you see in preseason, and even though it's only preseason, you know, like, yeah, they don't seem to have it. Troy Williamson was one. From the moment he stepped in the NFL, he was overwhelmed, and you knew, like, yeah, you know what, this was not a first-round pick. Other guys, you know, impressive. Justin Jefferson shows flashes. You think, like, wow, we may have something special here. What are you going to get these next few weeks and into the preseason out of Drake London? Because he's going to have a big year if the Falcons want to do anything. Number 6 in the biggest storylines for training camp is Aaron Rodgers trying to get on the same page with all of his wide receivers. Or maybe which Nick Cage character Aaron Rodgers will dress up as next. We'll see. That'd be a good bit. Every day he should show up to training camp as a different Nicolas Cage character. But Aaron Rodgers, number 6 on the list, because you're talking about an MVP quarterback and a team that's trying to win a Super Bowl. And Devontae Adams is gone. He's got some other guys he's got to get to know. Rodgers, number 6, you know a lot of attention is going to be paid to him these next few weeks. Then we get into the quarterback battles. I put these towards the first, the top half of my list. Number 5 is Darnold against Baker. I assume the job is Baker's. The Panthers can play it up to be a quarterback competition. But if you were that sold on Darnold, you wouldn't try to get Deshaun. You wouldn't draft a quarterback. You wouldn't trade for Baker Mayfield. All offseason, they were trying to find ways to get away from Sam Darnold. I think the job is Baker's. But nonetheless, they're selling us on this idea of a competition. Let's see what happens. And quarterback competitions are usually the biggest stories of training camps. So Darnold and Baker, I put number 5. Number 4, I put Kenny Pickett and Mitch Trubisky for the Steelers. Pickett is our one hope of a rookie quarterback starting this season right away. What could he bring to the table? And then number 3, I would say Trey Lance and Jimmy Garoppolo, if it really is a quarterback battle. I think the Niners have made up their minds that it will be Trey Lance. I personally think it's a mistake. But what are we going to see from Trey Lance here in training camp these next few weeks? Much like Jalen Hurts, you get reports that aren't too great out of the Niners camp about working on some mechanics and throwing motion. And what are we going to get out of Trey Lance for a team that was just in the NFC Championship game? And I would also piggyback on this idea and this storyline with Deebo Samuel as well, who was unhappy this offseason about a contract. Are there any issues leading up to the start of the regular season for Deebo and the Niners? That's number three. Number two on my list, Kyler Murray. How much film work is he going to be doing? Now I'm very fascinated by this. 4 hours a week. By the way, when does it have to begin? All offseason? Training camp? Or just once? They did say game weeks, right? So I guess we don't have to wait till the regular season. But with this awkward story coming out yesterday, I do put Kyler number two, that independent study. I've been there before doing independent studies, and they usually, in academia, they're pretty laughable. I think it'll be a little bit different for Kyler Murray this year with the Cardinals. But number one, the biggest story is still the training camp. It was the biggest story of the offseason. It was one of the biggest stories last season, is Deshaun Watson. We're still waiting on the official verdict for Deshaun. And it's been, at this point now, a few weeks. It's been almost a month since the hearing wrapped up. Still no word. Training camp has begun. When is Deshaun going to be suspended? How long will it be for? Now, I don't feel too bad about the Browns being held, you know, in purgatory and all of this because they knew what they were getting into. They got into bed with Deshaun Watson. Here's the results. But with that said, number one, I don't know why this is dragging on so long for the NFL. And number two, the Browns probably knew what they were doing, what they were getting involved in when they went out and got Deshaun Watson. But they also probably assumed, like, hey, it's the NFL. They'll at least, you know, be on their P's and Q's that the NFL will let us know. They'll give us enough of a heads up, enough of a head start, enough of a runway that whatever we have to deal with Deshaun, we'll be able to handle it this year. And so even though the Browns don't have much of a leg to stand on in this whole situation, I could still understand them being frustrated that it's like, all right, come on, training camp's beginning. Which quarterback needs to get the reps? We're almost into August. How long is he going to be out for? The hearing wrapped up over 3 weeks ago. Like, what are we waiting for? Can we get the official verdict? What's taking so long? But that's the big story, of course. Speculation now is that it won't be a full year. We originally thought maybe it'd be a full year. I think it probably should be a year for Deshaun. But to me, that's still the biggest storyline, especially now with training camp's beginning. The Browns are out there practicing. Deshaun's going to be practicing with them. And if you're Kevin Stefanski, you're wondering, like, all right, how much work do I need to give to the other quarterbacks? Because come week one, it probably won't be Deshaun under center. Is Deshaun going to be – if Deshaun's suspended for the whole year, right, he doesn't need to take any reps. Wait till next year. Make sure Jacoby Brissett's good to go. So it screws up your whole plan. If you're the Browns, you're still waiting on the outcome. So are we as football fans. And here we are going another week waiting to see if the NFL is going to make some sort of announcement. Preseason football is 9 days away. Regular season football, 44 days. The NFL is right around the corner. It's exciting. Training camps are off and rolling. And those are really more than 10. But those are the biggest storylines and things to watch here these next couple of weeks heading into the season. We'll wrap up your Tuesday when we come back. It's the Maurer Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
I'm doing great, but I'm hoping you could call me Boca Baby.
Great show. You did a good job.
You're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You've always get these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear. We like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays, where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke. Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Just want to say, I find you the low country Colin Cowherd. You use common sense with statistics, and you combine them, and you think outside the box.
Shout out to all the people in Dalton that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
You inspire us to listen more to your show every single day.
Da-da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da. Go ahead, boy. That's how you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Lunch with Luke for 3 hours, anything goes.
On the Maurer Midday Show.
I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. see me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Wrapping up your Tuesday on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, find it podcasted by searching ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to said podcasts. And you can always take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store, and through the app you can listen to the show live or on demand from anywhere in the world. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 11 different states and multiple countries on this Tuesday. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Somebody was asking earlier about the Braves and the trade deadline. Who are some guys that they could try to go after? There's all sorts of names. I think there could be a lot of sellers. You know, if you're looking for an outfielder like the Braves may be, Andrew Benintendi is one that is thrown around often. Relievers, you have Daniel Bard and David Bednar for the Pirates and the Rockies that both should be available. And would be Bard would be a rental. I think Bednar has more on his contract beyond this year. And I'll tell you what, if you were interested in starting pitching, I think there's more pitching depth. I think that's the position of strength this deadline, starting pitching. Maybe Nathan Eovaldi's on the move, Luis Castillo for the Reds, Frankie Montas of the A's is a big name. I think there's quite a few pitchers that can make a big difference, starting pitchers, that could potentially be moved over the next week. The trade deadline in Major League Baseball is a week from today. If you ever miss anything from the show, find the podcast. In the meantime, life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.